So I'm asked to give the dads a spray tan. That is surely something I have never had to do working as a nanny. I'm trying to get the job. This is what it takes for me to be able to be Coy's nanny. I'll do it. But I don't think I need to be that close to a 60-year-old man in a Speedo ever again.
Hey, what about me?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 620 for the week of June 22nd, 2026. I am competitive Manny David T. Cole, and I'm here with dad-proof dress code Sarah D. Bunting.
I might be a little too pretty.
Instagram food stylist Tara Ariano.
Here's your chopsticks.
And daddy groomer Stephanie Early Green.
Have spray tan machine, will travel.
Welcome to Extra Hot, great for another week. This is about to be the biggest dip between our intros and you learning what the fuck we are talking about. We are going to get there, but first, it's the end of the month. We're reminding you about the club. We do have a paid subscription tier. If you're not in it, you're missing good stuff. This week, for example, we're going to be talking about the final season of The Bear. Next week, we'll be talking about Elle, the Legally Blonde prequel show that features June Diane Raphael and James Vanderbeek in his last role. The week after that, we'll be talking about The Girl with Something Extra, a sexy 70s sitcom with Sally Field. And that's on orders from one of our members because forcing us to watch a TV presentation of your choosing is a perk for paid members.
This is UFO Erasure.
And UFO. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
We're also talking about UFO, part of our three of these series for 2026, where Dave is picking out British sci-fi shows of the 70s that he's never seen before. And neither have we. Other club perks include ad-free versions of the Wednesday show, access to our Discord server, where special opportunities like listener game time are offered first. Discounts on our Through Methods merch. If you want a space show or Bacula Dracula t-shirt, it's the only place to get them. Membership can be yours for as low as $5 a month. You can even get membership that's only the audio if you go through Apple Podcasts. We cannot make this show without paid members, so if you want us to keep doing it, get in that club if you can. And thank you to all who have. Also, a perk of paid club membership in odd-numbered months, green screen commentary from Stephanie Early Green. And guess what? She is our guest right now. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hello.
Stephanie.
Thank you.
We are here to talk about the very green screen worthy million-dollar nannies. The world's wealthiest people have the means to outsource a lot of the chores they personally don't want to do. And for some, that includes looking after their children. Leah, a 30-year-old who has nannied for such luminaries as Kourtney Kardashian, is launching an agency in Ibiza that will leverage her elite connections to get work for other childcare professionals who bubbled up on TikTok under the hashtag NannyTalk and who are definitely Leah's friends in real life and not just people who are cast by Freeform. But will they all get gigs that earn them more than the $3,000 they're paying Leah to share a house for the summer? That's $3,000 a month, actually. The show premiered its first two episodes on Freeform the night before the whole season dropped on Hulu, June 18th. We may talk about events from any of the season's eight episodes. Let's do the Chen check-in. Stephanie, should our listeners watch Million Dollar Nannies?
It's a strong nope from me.
Sarah?
I mean, if this kind of thing is your kind of thing, sure.
Dave?
I don't have time for your little baby shenanigans.
This kind of thing is my kind of thing, and even I am not going to watch it. So let's get into it. Stephanie, you're the only person in this conversation who has had to hire a childcare professional. Is it more important to you that they demonstrate their ability to plate food with Louis Vuitton chopsticks or that they give you an at-home spray tan?
Yes,
if I could get a nanny to give me a spray tan, I actually would look into that. But this is ludicrous, every aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I don't believe any of this for a second. Mm-mm. And we can talk more about it later. But that's my big problem with this is that either the premise needs to be so loose it's invisible. Like, you know, we're just following this bunch of nannies and there's no explanation as to how they all know each other. And we just, it's like a documentary. Mm-hmm. Or I actually have to buy into the premise that they know each other and that they're in Ibiza for some reason. Like, why are they there? Mm-hmm. How is this going to help them? Why would these supposedly mega wealthy families, we can get into that too, why would they agree to be on camera? Why would they not have an NDA? You can't suspend disbelief enough for me to cross that hurdle. And so I couldn't enjoy it because mm-hmm. it was too fake. Yeah. I know, coming from me, that's bad. You know it's bad when I'm saying it's too fake.
No, I agree. Like, a show like this has a foundational problem, which is the nannies can say that these are the ultimate, like the 1% of the 1%, but no one who is actually in that category is going to be on a show like this.
Would be caught dead. Yeah.
Or totally. Especially like not be on it themselves, but also not let their children be on
yes,
it.
Seriously.
This show and the rich quote people that are in it are a real testament to why old money hates new money.
Mm-hmm. I think we're pro old money podcast right now.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing is like
the rich, not him.
In the opening voiceover, Leah, the queen nanny or whatever, talks about these the clients as people who are trusting them with their greatest asset. With that, I don't even think the clients would say their children are their greatest asset. Are the children no. worth more than those 500 purses that have been collected on their behalves, even though they're young enough to still be pushed around in a pram, kind of? Like, no.
A designer pram.
Yeah. Mm. So go deeper. Talk about the relationship with the nannies, and then we'll go around. In what ways could you tell it was fake?
Well, I Googled one of them. She's a prominent influencer. And mm-hmm. then it turns out I didn't care enough to do deep dives on any of them, but they're all just influencers. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. even the whole nanny talk thing, it's so diffuse. Is that the word? That I don't even buy that as mm-hmm. like a community. It's just a hashtag that people use to try to get visibility.
Right.
Unlike Mom Talk, where it was referring to like a small community of people who actually knew each other and made content together. As far as I can tell, nanny talk is just like something influencers who happen to nanny use to try to get page views.
Dogs of Instagram.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Yeah. It's nothing. It's like too widespread. So like they're trying to make nanny talk happen, but it's not happening. And the nannies barely seem to know each other and there's no chemistry or interesting dynamic between them. So that was my take. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was fine. This is the kind of like risibly hateful, but probably sort of harmless rich people that you would get on Below Deck, where it's like these are trashy people, mm-hmm. but they're cheerful about that and they're trying to get other work from it. So if you sort of accept that as part of the premise, then you'll be fine. My issues were, first of all, I do agree that it was not believable that like real super rich people, like the I've never heard of them until there was some like disputed arson case and Vanity Fair wrote it up rich. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be on here and they're definitely not going to let their kids appear without like blurring.
Right.
They want something out of it. Their kids want to be child stars. Fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's a fine thing to want. But like this was Below Deck before I sort of got sick of that. And the fact that it is in this like closed sphere of influencers and people who want to be seen getting basically free yacht rides on Bravo. Like, so that's an issue. But I was kind of hoping for a little more process a la like Showbiz Moms and Dads. Does anyone else remember that
yep.
show? Mm-hmm. That and Show Dog Moms and Dads, which I also loved. At least give me some insight into like what would be in the NDA. Like
right.
if it were a more long form thing, like Dave was mentioning, where it's like, okay, what are these unreasonable demands? Like this needs to be a documentary that gets around some NDAs and not this, like Ibiza House, like who cares? And also like Leah, I don't know, like the big revelation at the end. It's like Leah fucked one of the dads. Name some names and blow up her spot promptly or I'm not going to hang around. Mm-hmm. I waited for a while to see what would come of that and it wasn't enough. It was just like Taylor being in her 20s about working with her boyfriend. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's not a good show. I was just like compelled by parts of it. And then those parts didn't really pay off enough. So now I'm out.
Well, there's two things about that, which is one, my observation, and it took almost the whole first episode to get there, was that Leah is like one of the Liz's, the one played by Nick Kroll in Kroll Show. That's who she is to me. And then as we got to see more characters, Dave was like, okay, everyone in here is a Nick Kroll, Kroll Show character. Like the dads look are styled like Bobby Bottle Service.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But the other thing is how casual they are. Like when Sarah, when you say that it should be a documentary, like when they are just casually throwing out stories of like getting sexually harassed in someone's home where they're working. And like, how, you know, well, I quit on the spot and blah, blah, blah. This happens all the time. Like, I'm sure it does happen all the time. Like to nannies, even for people who aren't super wealthy. But like, obviously, the show does not have the capacity or the interest to pursue that in any kind of serious way. And so it's just thrown out like a cute anecdote, like, oh, God, yikes.
Yeah. Like hashtag dads. Am I right? Like barf, hostile workplace. That's bad. Y'all should unionize anyway.
But on top of that, I mean, Stephanie, as a parent, were you impressed by the amount of childcare or the degree of childcare that we saw? Because when we see Sydney and Leah pushing that pram around, I'm like, these people have never been around a baby in their lives. Like, they seem to have no interest or capacity to actually look after a kid.
It was so awkward. I also thought it was funny how the two Mannies were competing to, like, become the little boys, the little boy of the three gay dads. Let me check my notes. Coy is the boy and Bo is the girl. Mm-hmm. They tricked you with that one.
They did.
So Coy, spelled C-O-Y, the two Mannies are trying to like win Coy's affections. And one is going for the outsider angle. Like, I think this kid will pick me because we're both weird and outcasts. And I don't think that 11-year-old child thinks of himself that way. So I'm like, have you ever worked with kids before? Because this is not how kids think. They're not like, I want the childcare professional who's also doesn't have friends. Like, no, I mean, it was just... It was funny. Yeah, they seemed awkward with the kids. They seemed not actually interested in the kids. They were more interested in the prestige of working for the, again, huge air quotes here, mega wealthy. So I wouldn't hire any of these people. Also, not to take the side of the truly wretched woman in the first family, but do you want a really sexy hot nanny? I don't personally. I mean, not that I think my husband would like cheat on me with a nanny, but I also just would feel uncomfortable with some super hot lady with her boobs hanging out, like hanging around my house and my kids. Like, I don't know why they are all have to be so hot, I guess is another question I had.
Right.
Hot bitches. That was a 30 Rock joke. I'm not just saying hot bitches out of the blue.
There was just like also a lot of pointy and elaborate manicures. Like, I know this was literally a plot point, as it were, in the beginning. And it's like, okay, like, if this is how you create obstacles in your drama, fine. But like, that just seems like really uncomfortable for everyone involved, especially if you're nannying for toddlers and younger, like,
and babies.
No,
those nails are going to be harvesting all kinds of bacteria. It's so gross.
This is what I always thought about the teen moms. Yeah,
and stabbing children. Yeah. Oh, the teen moms. Yeah. The acrylics.
Yeah, I think with the whole outsider storyline, that was code for I, as a gay nanny adult, am perceiving this child as a gay kid. I think based only on him having his ears pierced.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He has three gay dads. Like,
right.
It was just misguided. I saw what he was going for, but like, don't try to like ally with this child who maybe doesn't even have a nascent sense of his own sexuality yet and have that be your like campaign to be hired. I don't know.
Yeah. Not to mention like when the other guy taught him how to tie his shoes and then one of the dads was like started crying because he's like, I never even thought to teach him that. Like, you didn't? why didn't you? He's 11. Like, what the hell?
That's a travesty.
It is. Was there any one nanny in this field, Stephanie, that you would trust to look after your children based on what we saw? Stephanie's making a face.
No, I mean, I didn't get a good enough sense for any of their childcare abilities or resumes, which, again, is a flaw of the show. I want to know, like, you know, what are these people's actual experience levels with children? That's what you look for when you're interviewing an actual person to take care of your kids. Like, have you taken care of kids my kid's age? How many? For how long? What kind of stuff do you do with them? Like, you know, it.
How many are still with us?
Yes. How many survived?
What's your survival rate? Yeah.
Is this 18-month gap because you were incarcerated? Like, yeah, it's not.
These are fair questions. I wasn't interested in any of the nannies. I was more compelled by the fake rich people. I mean, they were they were pretty fun to watch. I have so many questions about Daddy Moak. So many questions.
Even more melty Mickey Rourke.
Oh my God.
You're not wrong.
There's not anybody that I watch in this show that my notes just didn't devolve into throw this person into the ocean.
For sure.
Like almost across the board, especially, I even forget which one. It's the three gay dad's daughter going on about how she loves
Bo.
Pina colada mocktails and caviar, don't you know?
Caviar, that's a given. I was like, yep, slept to death. I'm not getting this job.
Yeah, I just like tensioning back the trebuchet, putting her in there.
Back to Iowa with you.
Yeah.
Seriously. It's a trebuchet reference.
The only one that wasn't like complete ocean bound was like the couple that came. They were like the most down to earth.
Mitchell and Taylor.
And I get the feeling they will be eaten alive. So I get the sense that they're not long term nanny people.
Probably not. They'll figure out something else to get on camera, I'm sure.
I had another kind of unanswered question about the whole Ibiza part of it. Were all these people, these are their second homes in Ibiza, or did they live there full time? Were they renting? Were they on vacation? Like, this was never explained. Like, what's the situation here?
The gay dad said they live in Iowa normally. They moved from there, from LA, I think, or from somewhere in California. So yes, this is their summer place. I'm going to just say, not that they own. I'm going to say they're renting it.
Yeah, they're renting it from the real rich people.
Right.
Yeah. Who travel with the childcare, because you don't do that to kids on a seasonal basis, I'm guessing.
Well, also, if you're a nanny and you're working for these mega wealthy people in New York or whatever, why would you leave that to go to Ibiza for like a short term gig? Like, none of it makes any sense. Like, if you already have these credentials where you're this in demand nanny for the mega wealthy, just do that. Yeah. Like, why are you doing this?
And I realize everybody's here for attention, and this is not the point. But if you're in Ibiza, number one party city in the universe, just get yourself the oldest nanny you can, the one that you know is not going to be running off to the clubs to snort cocaine off somebody's ass at 2 o'clock in the morning. You just want boring grandma taking care of your kids. But that's the opposite of the whole ecosystem that's going on here, which I don't, that's the part I don't understand. If I was stupid enough
to think this was real,
to believe they weren't all influencer type of people, which is like, why are you hiring these people that are immediately going from taking care of your child to partying all night, drinking, getting drunk, and then I guess coming back in the morning to do it all again? Like, it just, that part of it was just like, all right, that's why this show is super duper fake.
Also, drinking is probably the least of our concerns with these people. I imagine they're doing all sorts of drugs.
And why would you bring your kids to Ibiza in the first place? Like, string some electric fence around your compound in Iowa, find an actual grandma to these children to stay with them for a couple weeks, and go live your lives.
How are kids gonna know how to party? You gotta learn sometime.
Got a lot of shows. It's a great time for shows.
It is time to go around the dial. First stop, Tara.
I watched the first episode of Sugar Season 2. And first of all, I'm going to spoil the big twist of Season 1. This show...
Wait.
Spoilers ahoy.
It aired over 2 years ago. And if you cared about this show, you would have watched it. You don't care about the show and you shouldn't. For the first 6 episodes of 8 in the first season... Sugar seems like history's most derivative L.A. noir about a private investigator, intercutting moments from the titular character's life, he's played by Colin Farrell, with old movies he has watched and is obsessed with to the degree that he has a subscription to American Cinematographer magazine. Eye roll.
The show Dream On's at his window.
Oh, yes.
What about me?
Exactly.
Yeah. So then
at the very end of the 6th episode, we find out John Sugar is not a human private investigator. He's an extraterrestrial who gives himself injections to pass as human, and he's one of a few dozen aliens who have come to Earth.
Me too.
I think because their planet blew up. It doesn't matter. In addition to the very cliched case, he's working for a client. He has a cliched problem of his own. Someone did something to his sister. He doesn't know what. In the season one finale, something happens that causes all the aliens to take off for, I guess, a different planet. But Sugar loves LA, so he decides to stay. So the season two premiere is so abrupt. It feels like when a platform screws up while you're binging and it like skipped over a whole season. Like in the time since... we last saw him, Sugar has apparently been tracking Henry Thorpe, who's played by, hey, it's that Jason Butler Harner, because Sugar has reason to believe that Henry knows something about Sugar's sister's disappearance, and they end up together in a very lived-in shack. Like, if Henry's been on the run, he did not stop to, like, get rid of his books. It's just, like, very, he's really been here for a while, judging by what we see. When we join them, Henry's already bleeding out. We don't know who did it or why. This is the dialogue or some of it. Clip one.
I'm sorry.
Henry? Henry? You gotta tell me what happened. Breathe.
You just gotta tell me.
What did you do to my sister? What happened to my sister?
He doesn't find out. The guy dies. It's a scene we've seen a million times in our lives. Also, does Sugar's sister have a name? Do the show's writer know it or care?
Yes, it's Samantha Mulder.
Exactly.
Samantha, thank you.
Yep. So Sugar goes back to L.A. He gets a tip on a new case. His client's an up-and-coming boxer whose brother disappeared. A tip takes him to a hospital, and when he notices the name tag on the security guard at the door, we get this. Oh, God. Clip two.
Blaine. It's a cool name.
Right.
Well, you don't like it?
Come on, man. I've been getting shit for Blaine ever since I can even talk.
It's Bogart's character in Casablanca.
Never saw it, but that's my mom's favorite movie.
Well, he's tough, he's smart, in the end he sacrifices his own interests for a greater cause. I mean, you should see it. You'd thank your mom. Yeah, Blaine's a hero. John Sugar.
Blaine Bosco.
Very cool.
It's not very cool. Sugar is so salt of the not earth. Wow, he really relates to people. I was mad at the end of the episode, not even in a pleasurable hate watch way. It's just dumb. It's not the worst show on TV, but it is when it comes to shows where there's like a huge gap between the expense taken to make them and the pretensions that they're aiming for versus the actual product that we see. There is not another show that is worse in that calculation than Sugar. It's bad. Don't watch it. You should, however, go back to listen to our more in-depth discussion about it in Extra Extra Hot Grade 291.
Where Bobby hadn't actually got to the point where the revelation in season one. So we had to record a bit and stick it at the end of an episode 3 months later.
Yeah. For my plug, believe it or not, I wrote even more about Widow's Bay. This was at GQ. It is my questions that we would like to see answered in season two. And we'll link that in the show notes.
All right, Stephanie, what have you been watching that people need to know about?
Okay, well, Al and I have been on a British crime procedural journey for the last 6 months or so. We've worked our way through Blue Lights, Line of Duty, all six available seasons, Slow Horses, The Tower, and a few other one-off series that were so forgettable they don't bear mentioning. And we thought we'd scrape the bottom of BritBox when I discovered Ludwig, which stars David Mitchell of Peep Show fame as a puzzle setter. Excuse me. Puzzle setter in Cambridge who must pose as his detective twin brother to solve said brother's disappearance. Even though Ludwig is a recluse who prefers puzzles to people, relatable. On his first day on the job of faking being a detective, he solves a murder by using his puzzling skills and all the while becoming more and more entangled with whatever sinister forces were at work in his brother's disappearance. I found this show delightful, funny, and cozy, if such a thing can be said about a show in which every episode involves at least one grisly murder. The show does suffer from the Midsummer Murders issue of, wow, there sure are a lot of daily murders in this idyllic English hamlet.
A lot of logic puzzle murders, too.
And they're all like closed box, like logic puzzle solvable murders. Granted, the show takes place in Cambridge, which is a legitimate city, but the murder rate is giving DC in the 90s. Still, Mitchell is charming and funny. And so is Anna Maxwell Martin, who I recognize from Line of Duty as his childhood friend slash sister-in-law. And series two is airing this summer on BBC, so I might need to take a quick trip to jolly old England to watch it. And I recommend it to anyone who's looking for a soothing British mystery. Mm-hmm. For my plug, my website, stephanieearlygreen.com, has links to all my writing. It's a slow life out there for a fiction writer, but I do have a piece coming out in the Missouri Review at some point in the hopefully near future. So when that drops, I will post a link on my website.
Woo!
Sarah D. Bunting.
So after last week's four sitting subject on Extra Extra Hot Grade was the series premiere of From, I thought I would keep going with it. I figured that a few more episodes would settle out my feelings on whether this mysterious world and some talented actors could balance out A, some less talented actors, B, some annoying mystery show slash post-apocalyptic community character tropes, the, quote, touched young woman I'll never telling around all over everything, or see the temptation these shows often succumb to keep piling on questions and weird shit without answering anything or giving its characters a win. I somehow got to the end of the first season, which I guess tells me something. I'm just not sure what, and that's sort of emblematic of the experience of the show. Not really any closer to deciding. In case you aren't a club member, see Tara's previous comments, get on it, you should consider it. But the show is about a creepy town that exists outside of place, the two semi-estranged communities that populate it, and the monstrous forces that come out to hunt after the sun goes down. It is currently in its fourth season on MGM Plus, a real streaming service. It'll wrap things up after a fifth season, and it's not on such a big shot streamer that it can afford to lose fans with inessential fucking around. I do like a lot of these actors. Harold Perrineau, Ian Bailey is always better than I remember. I do respect that the show will kill off people we've come to think of as main characters. I do think the kid, Ethan, Simon Webster, is annoying, but pretty well written, even though in the abstract, a little kid character is a drag on plot, in my opinion. I appreciate that some questions have been answered in a sense, but it is also adding more of them, adding more facets to the town's weirdness, fake production design elements, Victor, the lone survivor of a previous generation, who is content to walk around with a lunchbox just being weird and tall. That's not really character development. There's a teleportation tree, for fuck's sake, and it's definitely more interested in letting characters get drunk on Nightville moonshine and monologue about their trauma as exposition instead of having other characters who just arrived behave in a realistic fashion, by which I mean buttonholing Nightville veterans about how time works, the nature of the monsters, what's up with the electricity and the supply chain. I don't need every allusion explained, but I do need people who got snacked on by a tesseract to be a little more proactively curious about it. David Alpi's Jade is a promising candidate for the audience POV on that in one episode, and then is basically off the board in the next. Things sort of proceed with him. He is very watchable. I'm going to keep trusting the process for now, but if you are within the sound of my voice and think that I should bail, feel free to at me. There's four seasons of this left. I do have other things to do.
The more you said, the less convinced I was that you needed to keep watching it.
I got to the finale of season one and was like, all right, like arms folded. And there was like a legit creepy moment where they finally get this like radio contraption to work. And then it's like Jim Matthews, the Bailey character, is on the thing. And the voice is like, is this Jim? Jim Matthews? Your wife shouldn't be digging at your house. And like every hair, like the way they did it was really good. It has like just enough creepy shit that I'm like, But then there's like Party City cobwebs in the forest and Harold Perrineau is obliged to like beat Walt. Like, again, stop picking scripts that make you do that. Anyway, We'll see what happens. I have other things to occupy my time and I might just occupy it with them. For my plug, on Best Evidence, I wrote about an old documentary on an 80s skateboarding star who is currently incarcerated for murder. The doc is called Stoked, The Rise and Fall of Gator. I will link to that review in the show notes.
Was he in Sassy?
Yep. I was about to say, we've talked about him on Listen to Sassy.
Yeah, how about that? Wow. All right, here's what's coming up. We're about to hit a couple-week break for us on recording over the holidays. So on Extra Extra Hot Grade, we have for you in the coming couple weeks, The Bear Season 5 discussion. The second of the three of these for 2026 is, as mentioned, UFO.
Or UFO, as they call it.
Yep. L, that's E-L-L-E, they took one letter and made it four. Mm-hmm. And then the girl was something extra for the July forcening. If you're not a club member, you can become one. Just go to extrahotgrate.com/club for details. And then here on EHG Prime, we're going to have an unlock from Extra Extra Hot Great. That will be the Star Trek Deep Space Nine baseball episode because it is baseball season, I am told. After that, we've got the commercial Pitchman draft number two. That was great. That was really fun to record. And then we'll be back with Little House on the Prairie reboot. And we're still looking for a guest for that one. Just kidding, is Kim. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is our guest, Stephanie. Stephanie, take it away.
Okay. Despite being a Nathan Fielder fan, I avoided the rehearsal for a long time. I would say I have a higher cringe tolerance than Gen Pop. After all, I watched Married at First Sight and Love on the Spectrum. But I sense, based on feedback from those I trust, that the rehearsal might be too much even for me. I resisted watching, even though my very funny and smart friend from college, Carrie Kemper, is a writer and co-EP on the show. But the intriguing premise of the rehearsal season two wore down my defenses, and once I started watching, I was hooked. In season two, Nathan sets out to apply his unique skill set, that is, taking thought experiments to their logical and artistic extremes, to solving a genuinely pressing issue, plane crashes resulting from lopsided power dynamics between pilots and co-pilots. Nathan goes to great lengths, most of which I will not spoil, to get his mind around the problem and generate solutions. But, of course, this is Nathan Fielder, and his methods of attacking the issue of pilot error are unconventional. The resulting six-episode series manages to be genuinely moving, hilarious, thrilling, and yes, exceedingly cringe-inducing, while not ever being cringe. It was very difficult for me to choose from the six episodes of season two of The Rehearsal, because each episode truly is a canon contender. But when I thought about the iconic and not-to-be-forgotten scenes of the entire series, I kept coming back to puppet breastfeeding, and I knew it had to be Episode 3, Pilot's Code. Episode 3 opens with a couple who cloned their beloved Yorkshire Terrier thrice, but the new dog's personalities are not the same as the original dog's. Nathan proceeds to, you guessed it, carry out an elaborate experiment, complete with a perfect recreation of the couple's old home, where they raised the original Yorkie, to see if raising one of the clone dogs in the original dog's home environment would shape the clone dog's personality for the better. As with every episode of The Rehearsal, Nathan follows his fancy down an increasingly specific rabbit hole. For example, the actors he hired to recreate the original dog's life start reenacting the actual couple's fights over whether or not to have children. And as a viewer, you might be like, what the fuck does this have to do with preventing airline crashes? But Fielder always lands the plane. Without revealing yet how exactly the clone dogs relate to the larger project of the show, Nathan brings up everyone's favorite hero pilot, Sully Sullenberger, and his miraculous landing on the Hudson in 2009. Clip one, please.
But something else happened in that cockpit before impact that is less talked about, but perhaps more relevant to my interests.
We got both of them rolling back. My aircraft.
Your aircraft.
Captain Sully asked his first officer if he had any ideas on how to solve the problem.
You got any ideas?
Actually, not.
Here, the first officer didn't need to overrule the captain because Sully invited feedback at a critical moment. If other captains could have the instincts of Sully, his personality, it's possible the entire aviation issue I've been obsessed with would vanish overnight.
Thus begins Nathan's quest to recreate Sully's entire life with himself playing the famed pilot from infancy to present day. Sadly, much of what makes this episode canon-worthy cannot be fully captured through audio clips. One must see with one's own eyes Fielder, a grown man in a baby diaper and bald cap, being picked up from his giant crib by a giant puppet mother and then breastfed by said puppet. But let's play a clip anyway. Clip two, please.
It was difficult at first to inhabit the mind of a baby. I know so much more than babies do, and it can be hard to forget all that stuff. So I tried not to think about the fact that I was a 41-year-old man and just did my best to be present in the moment. I was playing the long game here, and I just had to trust the process. After all, this did work on a dog.
Fuck.
Sorry. So many of the visual choices Fielder makes to portray Sully's early life are utterly bizarre and yet somehow make perfect sense, like Sully's parents being rendered with both puppetry and stilts, or Sully's little sister's face being like a weird pig-like prosthesis. As the episode proceeds, Fielder treats Sully's life like a code to be cracked, trying to identify the singular experiences that made Sully, Sully. Late in the episode, Nathan homes in on a theory based on multiple references in Sully's memoir to his iPod that Sully emotionally coped with the pressures of his work and personal life through music. But not just any music, the Evanescence song Bring Me to Life. After poring over cockpit recordings from the Miracle on the Hudson, Nathan concludes that Sully, while landing the plane in the river, was in fact listening to Bring Me to Life on his iPod. Clip 3, please.
Without cockpit video, we can't be sure what Sully was doing during those mysterious 23 seconds before he asked his first officer for help.
Got any ideas?
Actually, not.
But after the crash, Sully's iPod was discovered submerged in the flooded cockpit, which he confirms in his book.
Okay, which runway would you like at Teterboro?
We're going to be in the Hudson.
It might be nothing, or just a hunch I have from living as him for so long.
Okay, flaps out. The flaps out.
Flaps out.
But the chorus to Evanescence's Bring Me to Life just happens to be exactly 23 seconds long.
Oh. 250 feet in the air. Got no power on either one.
Got any ideas?
Caution, terrain.
Actually not.
Terrain.
This brings me to another canon-worthy aspect of this episode. I simply cannot hear that song now without picturing Nathan Fielder in a bald cap and a stick-on mustache landing the plane. In the end, Nathan doesn't land on, pardon the pun, one precise element or experience that made Sully the consummate pilot that he is. But what makes this show so fascinating isn't necessarily its conclusions, but its ability to probe real issues. For example, pilots' reticence to seek mental health treatment for fear of being grounded by the FAA, while never straying far from absurdity. Nathan continuously walks a fine line between earnestness and satire, sometimes veering back and forth between the two. As a viewer, you must accept this limbo state in order to fully let the rehearsal and all of its genius and weirdness wash over you. It's clear to me that Nathan both cares about this issue and is trying to make a comedic product. In the end, does his Sully cosplay solve anything? Unclear. But as Nathan says at the end of this episode, I'm not sure what it means, but it's interesting. I hope you'll agree and vote Pilot's Code into the canon.
Stephanie, thank you so much. I feel like I should go last since I think the only one who had seen this before. Mm-hmm. So Sarah, why don't you start off our discussion?
Yes, known Nathan Fielder and Flying Averse co-host Sarah D. Bunting. I was captivated by this. I respect what Nathan Fielder does without feeling like it is for me, mostly. The David Lynch axis, like, glad you exist, glad you're doing what you do, it's not for me, next. This was fascinating. Like, there were so many little funny aspects about something, but also the earnestness with which these experiments are like blueprinted to the absolute edge of the paper, I think is what makes it go. And there were a couple of almost haunting moments in this. Like, they cut towards the end to the set that they're on and like this cockpit rear projection of the Hudson, and that they're climbing out of the, you know, fake cockpit or the dummy cockpit and sitting in like a dummy ambulance with dummy blankets on. And it's like, they really did go to the edge of frame. They thought of everything. And there was something beautiful about it, but there was also something creepy and funny about it. And the way that that's kind of just life. It's just like a big mess with not a lot of correlation. And sometimes it's hysterically funny and other times it's really terrifying. And I think he really got at something about that in this episode. Like, you know, the reading of Charlotte's Web and the wallpaper and that these dudes in tool belts are building this like absolutely massive crib. I mean, it was very funny, but it was also taking the idea and the proof seriously, but he's not taking himself too seriously. I think you can't if you're going to just be in a bald cap and a diaper for even the time it took to film the scene. I really was not sure where the dog cloning was going to go, but then there were so many little throwaway lines in that section that were so funny. Like, even our actor cats. And then the cats are just like being cats. Like, okay, actor cats, sure, sure, Jan. You start the episode and for like the first third, you're like, there's absolutely no way that he can pull this back together. But he does, and the fact that you could sort of tell how he does it, but then you also sort of can't exactly because the whole is greater than the sum of the extremely weird parts. I mean, I think that's good. I think that's a testament to it. It made me consider, again, I am positive Nathan Fielder is a genius whose work I don't need to hang out with, but I considered it. I considered keeping going, and that's one of my canon criteria for sure. So thank you for this presentation. I never would have interacted with this if you hadn't proposed it, and I'm glad I did. Dave.
Yeah. When the Nathan for You finale, or was it the finale?
It was the series finale.
Was presented for the canon. I did not care for it. I thought I could see the seams in the argument he was making for the end game of that episode. Don't need to get into it, but that sort of, it broke down for me on that level. But this one was just complete considered nonsense that I quite enjoyed it after the lull of the dog stuff building up to the moment where it intersects with the pilot theories. And I hadn't seen this show. So for me, I kind of knew it had something to do with pilots, but I thought the way it was starting, this was just like a tangent episode. You know, this is the equivalent of the rehearsals. And now we're going to look back on this one character's origin story. I didn't understand what was going on in that regard. But then when they started weaving it into the pilot story of the season, then it really kicked into high gear. And then when he is a baby on a wire system and a giant puppeteered mother made out of paper mache is now changing his diaper, including a big poop in it, then I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll settle in for this ride. And from there on, it was just really, really great. I am sort of like Sarah, like I understand that he's doing things really smartly, but just some of the output I didn't really like in the past. But this one I was quite pleased by. There is a moment, I'll play a clip right near the start where they're explaining how they're going to try to introduce more nurture aspects to the cloned dog, one of the three cloned dogs. So the lengths they go and then just the little jokes they throw in were great. Here's that clip.
Achilles.
The only difference would be the smell of the city, which was easy to match by regularly collecting San Jose air using a compressor and transporting it 350 miles via truck to LA. That way, on Zeus's daily walks, he'd smell the same thing Achilles did back in 2011. And with period-appropriate cars and actors portraying tech moguls, it was your average San Jose morning, but in LA.
Oh, I'm so sad about Steve Jobs. A legend, huh?
And then as those two dudes are walking, they walk right past a Jared Subway ad at a bus stop. I'm like, all right, that was...
Oh, God.
Like a perfect little moment. On top of that, some of the things that Stephanie was mentioning, the weird choice of the Twilight Zone pig mask for the sister. The parents are sometimes on stilts. Another moment that stuck out for me was during the plane reenactment, there's a scene where Scully must masturbate in the plane for reasons and the whole thing where he has to clear the set and they throw out the actor and they bring in this robot so that it's all kosher, I guess. It was just like so weird. But actually my favorite dumb moment of the episode, they're just doing like an introspective moment and Nathan as Sully is peering into the window of the faux set they created for the fake parents of the dogs. in order to see if the dogs actually can be changed. And there was something just so dumb and poignant about that moment that sort of like wrapped up what I felt about this episode, which is like, it's high stupidity, but it's also like your first university essay where you're just trying so hard to make it work. No, you have to up your game from what you've been doing in high school, but it's real tough, but somehow you pulled it off.
Mm-hmm. I happened to have the captions on when I was watching this, like, cockpit masturbation scene. There's one that says, brackets, robotic Carol dummy creaking. But I had to just pause it and laugh for like 10 minutes. Just perfect. Perfect encapsulation.
Mm-hmm. All right, Tara, you've watched before, so...
I have. I reviewed it for Cracked when the season came out. We'll link that in the show notes. I had watched just the first episode of season one and was so put off by it that I never went back until I had to review season two. And then I watched the whole series. I believe I watched both seasons in a day, which I would not advise. It's an intense show. And I love the idea of picking out just this one episode because it is the most... It has definitely the most bizarre and memorable visuals, but also the way it fits like a puzzle piece into the story of the whole season is so interesting once you get to the end and look back on it. And the idea that Nathan would decide the way he's going to crack this case in his way is to do like a close reading of Sully's memoir as though he wrote it. Like, I'm sure he didn't. I'm sure he contributed the stories, but I doubt like this is... a true look at his psyche. But the way Nathan homes in on like the idea of having to shut off his emotions and how Sully figured out ways to cope with them, perhaps because Nathan had his own preconceived idea on both of those things and was sort of reading that into it. I mean, I can't say more without giving away the whole season, but it really goes places that you don't expect. And this is, it does feel like a turning point in a fascinating way. I mean, you can hear how upsetting the nursing is just in the audio clip alone. Like, if you can listen to that and then imagine what you're looking at, you can't unless you've seen it.
You can, because one of the disturbing things is that there's like a beer spigot or something sticking out of her nipple so he can get the milk. And it's like very shiny metal. And the whole thing is very disconcerting.
Oh, yeah.
It is so gross.
But you don't forget it. I mean, you won't forget the look of the puppet in general. Of the actors when they're on like those thick stilt legs and the poor woman with, like, I mean, I know they're not real high heels, but like having to stilt walk around on them. It's all bizarre. This episode is really sharp. And, you know, Sarah said the whole is greater than the sum of parts. That's definitely true of season two for sure. And I actually think you could probably handle watching it, Sarah. And I don't think you would be mad at me or Stephanie if you got to the end of it.
Okay.
It's good. The payoff at the end is quite something.
All right. Challenge accepted.
Yep.
Let's put this to the official vote. Sarah D. Bunting, what say you?
He did land the plane, so to speak, and so did Stephanie. It's a yes for me.
I'm going to say yes as well. Tara?
Me too.
All right. So... The Rehearsal, Season 2, Episode 3, Pilot's Code. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Camp.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover who is our winner and loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
I do. And look... You know, we live in an IP era, for better or worse, but there are still some properties that have not been mined. And one of those is Simon Says, a piece of IP no one owns that is getting a competition series adaptation at Netflix. Because I guess, why not? Why not? The Simon Says Show.
Is it made by the people that brought you the quiz with balls? Because it sounds like about the same level.
I did not look.
Is the host a guy named Simon? Did they at least do that part of it? Did he get Simon Baker, the mentalist?
I don't think they've gone that far yet.
All right, fine. They get Simon from Frisky Dinga.
Oh, amazing.
I wish.
And loser of the week?
Oh, Project Runway some more. Adding Tyra Banks as a judge when, as Tara put it in our episode rundown, she's firmly in her flop era, and we have talked about how the show is as well already, this is not going to help. So I guess if you're going down, find a mountain and drive it into the side. I guess that's the plan.
Well, speaking about firmly in your flop era, do you know what time it is?
Game time.
It's game time. This is game time. It is the fifth of our current season. The scores sit at Tara 2, Sarah 0, Value Guest 2. Today we're playing What Me Query from Monty, who earns himself an extra credit topic of his choosing, plus a free shirt at the EHG store. Monty writes, how well do you know the comedic sensibilities of Mad Magazine? In this game, I will provide you with wacky character names from a Mad Magazine TV parody, and then you will guess the show. However, you do not get the question to yourself, dear players. You get one wacky character name, after which you can either guess or pass. If you guess it incorrectly or pass, play moves on to the next person in line with a new wacky character name. Also, if you guess incorrectly, you're out of this question. So that means, yes, Sarah D. Bunting, you only get one guess per question.
Thank you.
But we're not done yet. Whoever gets it right gets first crack at the bonus question, guessing the Mad Magazine parody title. 5 points for a bullseye. Nobody gets a bullseye. 3 points for what I think is the closest answer. Everyone gets a crack at that one. All right, let's throw it to Pinky to see who is going first.
We will start with Valued Guest.
All right, Stephanie, you will get the first character name for our first question. And our other order will be Sarah, then Tara. We have 18 questions, no steel meals today, but we do have one Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone somewhere in the second half. Are we ready to play What Me Query?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Stephanie, you get the first wacky character name. You're trying to guess the real TV show title. It is Radio. Radio. Now, you only get one guess, so you either guess or pass at this point.
Pass.
Play moves to Sarah D. Bunting. You have Major Burned. Major Burned.
Major Burned. Is this MASH?
This is MASH. Yes, it is MASH from April 1974 edition of Mad Magazine. All right, Sarah D. Bunting, then Tara, then Stephanie.
1 point for that, right?
1 point for that.
Okay.
All right, Sarah, then Tara, then Stephanie. I want what you think is the Mad Magazine title of that parody. So, Sarah D. Bunting, what do you think here?
Mush.
Tara.
Smash? I think Sarah's right.
Stephanie.
Crash.
Crash. All right, the answer was Meshuggah.
Oh!
Meshuggah.
Okay.
So I'm awarding no points. I don't think anybody was in the area there. So only 1 point given in that question. It goes to Sarah. And Sarah, you're going to start us off with our second Mad Magazine parody question. You've got joiny. Join as
joiny?
In...
joiny?
Two things joining together. Joiny.
Right, joiny. Inspector Gadget.
Oh, she guesses. You're out. Play moves on to Tara. You got itchy.
Happy Days.
Happy Days is correct. Yes. Joiny, wow. Itchy, The Funds, Putsy, yeah. And Riff.
Great.
Oh, wow. Oh, I didn't read the other ones for a match. Radio, Major Burns, Cockeye Piercer.
Oh.
Crapper John.
Oh, my.
Colonel Bleak and Fat Lips.
Great.
Yep.
Wow.
You are correct. That was from December 1986. All right. Starting with Tara, what is the Mad Magazine title for the Happy Days story? Go.
Happy Duds.
Stephanie.
Sappy Ways.
Nice.
Sarah.
Crappy Days.
Crappy Days is a bullseye. 5 points for Sarah D. Bunting. Whoa. Nicely done. All right, Tara, you'll start us off with this one.
Okay.
Antsy. Antsy. As in feeling antsy.
Mm-hmm.
What is that show? Guess or pass?
The West Wing.
West Wing takes a crack at it and you are out. Stephanie, you've got Mr. Curlson. Mr. Curlson. Antsy and Mr. Curlson. Guess or pass? Only you and Sarah are here now.
Welcome Back, Cotter.
Welcome Back, Cotter is incorrect. All right, Sarah D. Bunting, you can just run the board until you think you know it. Your next one is Dr. Johnny Frantic.
WKRP?
WKRP is correct. Yes, that is worth 1 point. Starting with Sarah, what is the Mad Magazine title?
K-R-A-P.
Tara?
I'm going to say it's W-C-R-A-P.
Stephanie?
In Cincinnati.
W-A-N-K.
I'm giving a non-bullseye three-pointer to Tara. It was W-K-R-A-P in Cincinnati. Very close. Very close. Mm. We are moving back to Stephanie. We've got Nuttally. Guess or pass?
Pass.
All right. Passes to Sarah. You've got Mo.
Facts of Life.
Facts of Life is correct. December 82. All right. What is the Mad Magazine version of the Facts of Life?
Facts of Life sentence.
Tara.
The craps of life.
Stephanie.
The smacks of life.
The smacks of life. I am going to award no points for this one. 3 points is a lot for something that wasn't quite the yaks of life.
The yaks.
Sure. Okay.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting, start us off with Bullethead Shanana. Bullethead Shanana. Guess or pass?
I'm tempted to waste in his dispensing, but I won't. Ass.
Passes to Tara, who gets Dim Feeling. Dim Feeling.
Night Court?
Night Court is correct, yes.
Nice.
Bullethead, Dim Feeling, Muck, Silly Jung, and Harry Stone.
Sure.
1985. All right, Tara, what is the Mad Magazine version of Night Court?
Night Bores.
Stephanie.
Night Fart.
Nice.
Day point.
Sarah.
Not Court.
I'm going to give this one 3 points to Sarah. Nut Court was the answer.
Nut Court.
Nut Court, of course.
Tara.
Yep.
You've got, starting us off, Apathy.
Pass.
Passes to Stephanie, who gets Doze.
Pass.
Passes to Sarah, who gets Blanched.
Oh, now I get it.
Golden Girls.
All right, 1986. The Golden Girls is correct. Sarah D. Bunting, we're always starting with you here. What's the Mad Magazine title?
Gilding Girls.
Molden Girls.
Oh, there you go.
With an apostrophe.
Stephanie.
Olden Girls.
Bullseye for Stephanie. Woo! The Olden Girls is correct.
Nice.
Nicely done. All right, starting with Stephanie, you've got Blandum Wasp. Blandum Wasp. Blandum Wasp.
Pass.
Passes to Sarah, who gets Brain Dead Wasp.
Blandum and Brain Dead?
Yep.
Shit. Pass.
Passes to Tara, who gets Dullin OK.
Yeah, it's 90210. Beverly Hills 90210. We read this.
Also, Jib Wasp, Smiley Wasp, mm-hmm. Prima Donna, Skeeve, and Belly.
Skeeve, yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Skeeve. Yep. All right.
Starting with Tara. Now you have an advantage because you've actually covered this for a podcast. What is the Mad Magazine version of Beverly Hills 90210?
I got to go Beverly Hills 90210, and I know that's not right.
Stephanie.
Beverly Hills 90210.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sarah.
Yeah, I think it's Stephanie. So Beverly Thrills 90210.
All right. I'm not awarding any points because the thing they changed were the numbers and nobody attacked it from that vector. This is Beverly Hills 911.
Okay.
Yep. Oh.
That's pretty good.
Sarah D. Bunting, right. Start us off with Silly. Silly.
Saved by the Bell.
Tara, Asylum.
Alf?
Ooh, all right, Stephanie, it's yours to run. You can just keep on passing the whole thing. My Doll. Silly, Asylum, My Doll. If you pass, play just goes right back to you. So I can just read you all the names if you want.
Sure.
Silly, Asylum, My Doll, Vane, Meat, Randy, Belly, Fonda, Jerk.
The Smurfs?
No. I keep wanting to answer that for all of these.
All right. Anybody have a second guess now that you've heard them all?
No.
That was Melrose Place.
Oh.
Melrose Place from 93. All right.
We'll start with Stephanie, since nobody got any part of that. What is the Mad Magazine version of Melrose Place?
Smellrose Place.
Smellrose Place. Sarah.
Melrose Plots.
Tara.
Melrose Black.
I'm giving it 3 points to non, again with this host, Stephanie Early Green. Smell Gross Place is the actual answer.
Oh, sure.
Very close.
We read that one too, I think.
You did.
Yeah, we did. Yep. We read a lot of things.
We really,
we
do.
What do you want from me?
We do.
All right, start us off, Tara.
Yep.
Dr. Flasher.
ER.
Play goes to Stephanie with Major Nerds. You can pass, don't forget.
Yeah, pass.
All right. Sarah, Dr. Flasher, Major Nerds, Captain Crisco.
Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
Yes, that is correct. All right. Starting with Sarah, what is the Mad Magazine version of that show?
Well, all right, I'm sure there's a better guess than this, but I can't get this one out of my head now. So Deep Space Nine with the German spelling of okay. Nine.
Tara?
Am I out? Because I
no,
guess...
No, you get to guess on the... Everybody gets the bonus.
I'll go back to the black well and go Star Black, Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
Deep Space
That's
None.
A good one.
Okay, Stephanie.
Ooh, yeah.
Star Trek Deep 6-9. That's
gross. Oh, that's
yes.
good. I'm going to so give smart. This a three-pointer to Tara for getting the closest to the actual answer. Star Black, Deep Space Swine.
Slime? Wow.
Swine. Oh. As
Swine.
Yeah. All right, 3 points for you, 1 point for well. Sarah. Value guest. Start us off with nails. Nails.
Pass.
Sarah, Martian.
Brady Bunch.
Tara, Raz.
Frager, and I should know I'm Frager.
You are correct from 94.
Oh, nice one.
What is the Mad Magazine version of that show, Tara? We also had Illith, and Daffy.
Frayjerk.
All right, Stephanie.
Brazier.
What was that again?
Brazier. With
Brazier.
A B.
I don't know.
Sarah.
Frayed, like frayed thread. Frayjer.
I'm going to give Sarah 3 points here. I think she was the closest to flakier.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I accept your judgment, but.
Yeah, I think you were the closest to the spirit of that. He is flakier cranium.
I'm not sure if that, like Mullen Dash, not sure if that's good or bad.
All right, Sarah, fact moldy.
Once more?
Fact moldy. A truth and gross stuff that grows in humid conditions.
Right, got it. Fact moldy. Yeah. Oh gosh, pass.
All right, passes to Tara, who gets Agent Skulky.
The X-Files.
Oh, the X-Files Christ. Is correct for a point. May 1995. Edition of Mad Magazine, but what was it called?
I gotta go again. The Black Files.
The Black Files. Stephanie.
The X Miles. I don't know.
Such confidence in that answer. Sarah.
The EX Files.
Ooh, I think I need to give this one to Tara for 3 points. The Eck Files.
Oh.
ECCH. Eck. Files.
Okay.
All right, Tara, take us into our score break. You've got Shoey. Guess or pass?
Pass.
Passes to Stephanie, who gets Chandelier.
Bluey.
Nope. Sarah D. Bunting, floss. Floss. Shoey, chandelier, floss.
No. Friends.
You are correct. It is Friends. Yes. Sarah D. Bunting, what did Mad Magazine call Friends, 1995?
Fronds.
ends.
Stephanie.
Fiends.
Fiends is a bullseye. Fiends is the answer. Wow. All right. That may have changed things. Let's get the scores here. We're over halfway done.
We're pretty close. Okay. Sarah's in the lead with 17. I have 14. Stephanie barely behind 13.
All right, here we go. All right, Stephanie, pick a number between 1 and 6, please.
4.
The fourth Trivial Pursuit box is the Boob Tube Travel Edition. Here's how it's going to work. You're going to get 2 points if you can get half the questions right. 3 if you manage to sweep it. We're going to double that to 4. Question number 1. There is no categories on these for whatever reason.
Just me answering?
Just you. 6 okay. questions. Do as best as you can.
We believe in you.
This box is from the 80s, I believe. So keep that in mind. What kind of programs did Orson Welles once claim boasted the highest acting in television? What genre of television?
Ooh, I was going to say radio.
The highest acting in television. Say that in a very drunk Orson Welles
voice. Soap operas.
You are correct. Yes, it is soap operas.
Wow, nice.
That's one. What cheap beauty contest did Rip Taylor host?
Cheap beauty contest?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Sorry.
The $1.98 beauty show.
Used to be on the Game Show Network for a hot second.
Okay.
Whose General Hospital appearances helped him become a well-known exercise and diet instructor?
Jane Fonda?
Well, I said him. That was a clue. Sarah D. Bunting knows.
Oh.
Simmons?
Yes, Richard Simmons is correct. All right. You got 3 questions left. Need to get 2 to get you 2 points. What TV comedian's characters included Willie Lump Lump and Boulevard Shagnasty? Shagnasty. Boulevard Shagnasty.
Johnny Carson.
Red Skeletons. All right, you need both these.
Skedaddle Hopper.
What All in the Family regular was heard as a voice on Pebbles and Bam Bam, which is a Flintstones spinoff series. So which actor from All in the Family was a voice on Pebbles and Bam Bam?
I could not even name one actor from that show, so don't know.
Guesses?
Sally Struthers?
Yep. All right. Struthers. Just for fun, let's just play this out. What show features a store called Edna's Edibles?
Facts of Life.
Facts of Life is correct. Yes. Facts of Life sort of just took over the podcast.
It really did.
Weeks.
Yeah. It's a Facts of Basketball podcast.
That was a tough pick, Stephanie. You're too young.
Sorry.
Those are too old for even us, and we're much older than
Seriously,
you.
That card is older than me, I think.
Everybody has 2 questions left. Going back to Stephanie to start us off, your wacky character name is Dim. Dim.
The Office.
Oh, just went right for it, and you're right. To Sarah, Lieutenant Parrish, as in...
No, oh, Lieutenant Parrish. Tim, Lieutenant Parrish. I don't know. Fuck. Pass.
To Tara.
Yep.
Chat away.
Is this ER?
All right, Sarah D. Bundy, you get to run the board, so here they all are. Dim, Lieutenant Parrish, Captain Plainway, Two-Buck, Chataway, Kleenex, Mess, Banana Torrid. That's a good one. And Cinnamon.
I mean, I would have guessed ER, so is the...
Captain Plainway was...
Yeah, no, I know. It's, oh my God, not Babylon 5, the other one. Star Trek Voyager.
Star Trek Voyager is correct for a point from 1995. All right, let's do it, starting with Sarah. What is the Star Trek Voyager Mad Magazine name? Let me just say, they do have a tradition. I hope you're paying attention.
Star Blech Voyager.
Oh, that's good.
That's good.
Star Blech Bon Voyage.
Stephanie.
Star Ek Voyager.
That is incorrect. I don't think anybody quite got it, so I'm going to withhold points for Star Blech Voyeur.
Oh, okay. Oh. Yep.
Ooh.
Sarah, start us off with Childs. Childs.
Don't know. Pass.
Tara, Extender.
Pass.
Stephanie, Angle. Angle.
Pass.
Sarah, Pillow.
Pillow.
One left.
Angle, Extender, Pillow. What was the first one? Childs?
Childs, Extender, Angle, Pillow.
You do.
Cheers.
And Tara gets Hard Cordelia.
Yeah, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Is correct. Oh. Now, Tara.
Oh,
what
God.
Did Mad Magazine call that?
Tuffy the Tennis Player.
Stephanie.
What if it was?
Duffy the Empire player.
And Sarah.
Fluffy the Vampire Slayer.
Busty the Vampire Spayer.
Okay.
I'm awarding no points here.
Yeah.
All right. Nice. It is back to Tara. Next one. Wacky character named Jem. Truly outrageous.
Is this The Office?
Play moves to Stephanie for Jody Plotter. Jody Plotter.
Fucking hell.
There's only three clues here, so I might as well just take a guess.
Yeah.
Jem, Jody Plotter.
Is this Welcome Back, Cotter?
And to Sarah, we got Pasty Wusser.
Dawson's Creek.
Dawson's Creek is correct from April 2000. All right, here we go.
Read that one too.
Covered it. What's it called? Sarah.
Oh my God. I hate having to start. I don't think this is it. Dimson's Crack. I don't remember.
Darn.
I'm pretty sure it's Dudson's. Dudson's yeah. Creep.
Dudson's Creep. All right, Stephanie.
Awesome Shriek.
I'll give Tara 3 points for this one. It was Dudson's Just Creek.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they didn't put mustard on Creek. Mm. His last name, Leering.
That's right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Dudson Leering. 3 points for Tara there. Everybody has one question left, so let me hit the scores.
Okay. Stephanie still on 13. I have 18. Sarah in the lead, 19.
Okay, it's close. Here we go. Stephanie, start us off with Swill Gruesome. Swill Gruesome.
I don't know. Right. Pass.
Passing to Sarah with Captain Grimm. Speak up.
Pass.
Tara, Caught One Gallows. Caught One Gallows.
God, I have no idea. Firefly.
Stephanie, Nice Strokes. Nice Strokes.
Oh, Lost in Space.
I just got it.
What'd you say?
Lost in Space.
Lost in Space.
Sarah, you get to run it and I'll read them all to you. Swill Gruesome. Captain Grimm. Caught One Gallows. Nice Strokes. Surrey Saddle. Worry Frown. What is Mad Magazine parodying here?
Love Boat?
Love Boat is incorrect, Tara. What is it?
CSI,
no points, but that is correct.
Oh, Strokes.
All right, yes. Stephanie, start us off. What is the Mad Magazine of CSI called? I'll give you a hint. Somebody gave a wrong answer for another show, which would be a good answer for this show, part of it.
You
can extract that mustard, stick it on this answer. You're sitting pretty. Here we go. What's the answer?
CS Eyeball.
CS Eyeball. Sarah.
I like that, but I'm going with CS Oi.
CS Oi. Tara.
CS Psy.
I'm here to report Sarah D. Bunding got the bullseye. CS Oi. All right. Here we go. Question 17.
It's pretty cool.
For Sarah D. Bunting. Your first wacky character name is O.D.
Pass.
Tara. Pris Jerk.
Scrubs.
Scrubs is correct. Smelly It Bleed. Carlot Pillbox. Dr. Throb Hell Show. 2003. What are they calling Scrubs?
Screw-ups.
Stephanie.
Schlubs.
Sarah.
Scabs.
Stephanie Bullseye Schlubs.
Nice.
All right, last question. Tara.
Yep.
You've got Hack.
Will and Grace.
Out. Stephanie, you've got Sorehead. Sorehead.
I don't know. Pass.
All right. To Sarah, you've got Scare.
What was the first one?
Hack, Sorehead, Scare are your ones so far.
Scare. Yeah. Three's Company.
All right, you're out. All right, Stephanie, you get to run it. Hack, Sorehead, Scare, Mate, Sorry, Rock with an E, Chubby, which is pretty mean.
Oh.
Hack, Sorehead, Scare, Mate, Sorry, Rock, or perhaps Rocky, chubby. But it's, I think it's just supposed to be. There's a reason there's an E.
The Little Rascals.
I love that. Yes. It's Lost, right?
Rock with an E is Lock with an E. We were looking for Lost. Lost.
Yeah. Never saw that.
But what are they calling Lost? Good luck with this one. Let's start again with Tara. No points there. Lost. Mad magazine version of Lost.
Grossed.
Stephanie.
Found.
Sarah.
Toast.
Toast. No points here. It was called Lots.
Okay.
Oh.
I don't understand. All right. That is regulation. I need the scores, please.
Stephanie finished strong with 18. I was barely ahead with 19. Sarah D. Bunting really took an early lead, never lost it. 24.
Nice. All right. Congratulations. Sarah's on the board for the season. Before we get into our celebration, let's play out the tiebreaker. I'm going to give you the character name. You tell me what Mad Magazine's character name version was. All right?
Okay.
Here we go.
Oh.
The actual character in the show Deep Space Nine is Constable Odo. What did Mad Magazine call Constable Odo, Stephanie?
Odor?
Sarah.
Constipated, oh no.
Tara.
Constable P.U.
I'm here to tell you, Stephanie got it absolutely right. Constable Odor is correct. You get a steel meal for value guest future use.
Gorgeous.
Good job, everyone.
Sarah.
All right. Thank you, Monty. That was super fun. As soon as I saw Mad Magazine in the title, I'm like, this one's for Monty. Mm-hmm. Yep, I was right. Thank you, Monty. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We took careful care of our review of Million Dollar Nannies before going around the dial with stops at Sugar, Ludwig, and From. No rehearsal necessary for Stephanie's straight-to-canon pitch for Pilot's Code. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's Game Time from Monty. Next up, it's The Bear and UFO, which is tragically two separate things. Cousin Richie, is that a sad alien? Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
That's like the Rolls Royce of strollers.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm still sad about Steve Jobs.
And Stephanie Early Green.
Wake me up inside.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Crit.
I'm not going to show you everything, but I basically just masturbated in the plane while trying to fly it. The challenge of focusing on a task when your body is indulging in its most primal urges was really tough. But I eventually got there, and just like I assumed Sully had done, I was able to ignore my erection in order to fly.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canning. Where we take your peaches, we put them in cans with syrups, and then you judge of whether or not they're good or not.